Support for this podcast comes from Planned Parenthood. It's hard to imagine a world where we leave future generations with fewer rights and freedoms. Since the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills aimed at blocking people from getting the essential sexual and reproductive care they need, including abortion. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves access to care. And with supporters like you, they can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future to learn more and support their cause.
The skyway, high above the busy little one-way. In my stupid hat and gloves at night, I lie awake, wondering if I'll sleep, wondering if we'll meet out in the street.
Hey everybody, welcome to Reporting as Eligible. I'm Paul Noonan, right from Acme Packing Company and the Shepherd Express, and do the Milwaukee's Tailgate Podcast, though not this week due to work. This is our wrap-up of the just terrible Minnesota Vikings game, meaning it was a good game, but the Vikings are terrible, going into the pseudo-bye that is the Detroit Lions. And before we get started and I do intros, I just wanted to mention, I was on Carry the G with AJ Dillon over at Cheesehead TV this week, like Matt was a few weeks ago. And I'm going to append a little bit of that interview to the end of this. So when this podcast ends, if you want to hear me talking to AJ Dillon, continue to listen. It was fine. I did okay, but I'm not a natural interviewer, but you know, still fun. Anyway, let's get into the actual games here. So first of all, joining me as always, reclined comfortably in urban Wauwatosa, we have.
Hey, it's J.R. Radcliffe, trending sports reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Paul, give yourself a little credit. You asked some good questions. You got some great answers out of AJ Dillon. I was very impressed, but I do also feel like this is a big step for you because you have vowed in the past to stay away from talking to the athletes themselves.
Yeah.
That you like kind of that insulation. So this is a little bit out of your comfort zone, and I love it.
It's out of my comfort zone for a bunch of reasons. Zach Jacobson was on too, and he went first in that. And he started by bringing up all of the analytics people who say things like running backs don't matter to AJ Dillon, which I thought was...
We don't know any of those.
I don't know. I was like, is this setting me up for a trap? Am I going to get into a fight? But no, that didn't happen, fortunately. And I'll give also thanks to Aaron and Corey for having me on. And also some credit to them. You submit questions in advance. You know, I assume AJ is there with some conditions that they have to deal with. And I sent a bunch of questions, some of which were, I would say, slightly controversial and some of which were not. And they actually, I think, let me keep a couple that I thought they might kill. So appreciate that as well. You know, it was fun. It was good. I never talked to professional athletes ever. So it was an interesting thing to do. Anyway, Matt is also with us, who can now introduce himself.
Coming at you live from Kansahoma, I'm Matt, but you can call me Matub, Acme Packing Company Meme Weaver, and general Twitter rabble rouser. Guess what I learned today?
What'd you learn, Matt?
I am half the distance to Amarillo, Texas versus the distance to my home.
Wow.
If that describes how middle of nowhere Kansas I am.
When Amarillo is your reference point, that is the middle of nowhere, just generally speaking.
But yes, I am twice as close to Amarillo, Texas as I am to Colorado Springs, Colorado.
You could be in Amarillo by morning.
No.
You don't know that song, do you?
I know that song. Stop.
I don't believe you.
It's not
old school country.
It's the second best song about Amarillo.
Paul, what is the best song about Amarillo?
I believe it's called "Is This the Way to Amarillo?" I could sing it, but I'm not going to. It's an old like 50s or 60s pop bubblegum pop song. It's pretty good.
Up in San Antonio.
Maybe not if JR is singing it, then it's fine.
Everything that I got. All right, I'm done.
Yep.
Is This the Way to Amarillo?
Is
came
this
out
the way
in
to
November
Amarillo?
1971.
71. It sounds like a late 60s song to me, so that's fine.
I mean, early 70s might as well be late
60s. That's true. That's true. Very similar.
In the exact same way that songs that came out in 2001 feel so painfully 90s.
Yeah. Is This the Way to Amarillo has a lot of good, like, good na-na-na chorus that really sticks in your head.
It's got a good na-na-na chorus. Yeah, it does. Okay. So, I object to your use of the term painfully 90s. I don't subscribe to that at all.
Well, we're old, so it's
fine. Listen here, you jixer. hey, you know why I'm reclining comfortably? Because the Green Bay Packers have the one seed locked up.
They do.
Thanks to the Dallas Cowboys and their own, you know, extraordinarily lopsided victory over the Minnesota Vikings.
Yep. And also their above average special teams.
Yeah.
Incredible.
All kinds
Incredible.
Of things going on. Everything coming up Packers that could not have gone better for them in terms of how the weekend went. Like the Cowboys lost to the Cardinals just barely, but they did. The Buccaneers just exploded into nothingness as a franchise. And
and still won.
Still won.
Also, can we take some
Jets, but yeah.
Can we take some schadenfreudic? Yeah, is that a word? Schadenfreudic?
It is now.
Okay, take some schadenfreudic pleasure in the loss of the Cowboys, specifically because Mike McCarthy mismanaged their timeouts.
He sure did. They could have used one more of those.
Oh,
from the
times.
From the original German Sheldon Richard.
It's going to be a fun time when Dallas comes back to Lambeau Field in the divisional round
They scare me the most because just the pain of losing to them would be terrible. And even
it would be something.
It would. Even beside that loss, like McCarthy's really their only big weakness. Like, yeah, Dak's not perfect, but he's pretty good.
Yeah, losing Michael Gallup to injury is tough. That's
true.
An interesting wrinkle.
Yeah.
Well, also an insane injury there because the catch he made tearing up his ACL was incredible.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
What terrifies me about Dallas is Michael Parsons. I mean,
yep.
He's not a traditional edge rusher that the Packers have been very good at neutralizing. He comes from everywhere.
Yep.
That terrifies me.
Yeah, it's their defense is scary. They're good. But we don't have to worry about them for a while. They might even get knocked out before we face them because we have the one seed and get a bye and get to rest people against the Lions next week because who cares?
So the first note you have in the rundown is Sean Mannion.
Yes. So okay. So just getting back to the Vikings game, I don't know what to say about the Vikings game because Sean Mannion's just awful. One of the worst quarterbacking performances I've ever seen in my life. And I don't know why they went with him. Kellen Mond is certainly worth the shots if that's what you're bringing out there. But like, I'm glad the Packers won. I'm glad they had an easy time. I'm glad nobody got hurt. But you know, I like to learn something about the team during games. And I mean, you know, there's nothing you learned about the Packers in this game other than, I guess, they can stop a running attack if there's absolutely no threat of a pass, which is, I guess, is something. That's it, though. That's all I got.
But even then, so, like, it was, like, there's a screenshot that I absolutely love from the end zone angle. It's 4th-and-1 for Minnesota, and the Packers have their D-line completely spread out. Like, they're literally giving up the QB sneak.
They sure are. That was a great, 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 great screenshot.
Oh, yeah, so we got to see Mannion on the move a little bit. I mean, big guy, so you wouldn't expect him to be fleet of foot. But when he got his one like major rushing attempt, painful to watch. I mean, oh, my gosh.
Mannion on the move sounds like a really good fantasy team name or a really bad podcast.
I think it's a really bad fantasy team name is what it is. I think at this point, most people have heard the soundbite Mike Zimmer talking about Kellen Mond after the game. Like, do you want to see more from him? No, I see him in practice. I mean, that's not just throwing your quarterback under the bus.
That is...
that's like driving the bus over him and then backing up to make sure you get him again. That's independent of not letting Kellen Mond throw more in this game when you saw what Sean Mannion brought to the table. He clearly does not want Kellen Mond on his football team. Incredible stuff.
There's also reports coming out that Zimmer was like talking crap about signing Cousins back in 2018.
Yep. Oh wow,
yeah,
that's a marriage doomed to fail. Wow,
there's all kinds of problems in Viking land right now. Aside from all that, yes, there's also a nice article in the Defector this week, focusing on nepotism, which we discuss on this podcast quite often, and specifically focusing on the Vikings when we've mentioned their offensive coordinator is Clint Kubiak, but they had to replace their defensive coordinator midseason, and they promoted co-coordinators, one of which is Mike Zimmer's son. So one of the co-defensive coordinators for the Vikings right now is I forget Mike Zimmer's son's name, which I should have written in the rundown, but a bunch of anonymous players were interviewed for it and were not happy about it because he's not qualified because he hasn't been a coach that long.
Adam
Zimmer. So
also Adam Zimmer looks like every used car salesman working at his dad's dealership.
What was the number? It was like, was it 114 coaches on NFL staffs that are related in some way to other coaches?
Yes.
I mean, that was
either father, son, brother, or married to, or, you know, in law with.
And just an eye-popping number. That's incredible.
And there was only one franchise that had no nepotistic coaches on their team. I forget who it was, but it was either the Cardinals or the Falcons. But we know it's not the Packers. So.
No. That is truly
and, and so, like, Andre Patterson was also promoted to core defensive coordinator, and he has like 16 years of experience as an NFL coordinator and a bunch of other experience as a college coordinator and college position coach, and is also African-American. Obviously, Mike Zimmer's son is not African-American, so it did not sit well with a bunch of the Vikings, and they're just they're not in a good spot right now.
Officially eliminated from the playoffs after this loss. Man, wow, you hate to see it. You know, we joked about the special teams right there, but I don't know if it was a joke. That might be the biggest takeaway. I think you could look at the defense. I mean, it's not like they were missing a ton of guys on defense and offense. Sorry. You could look at the Packers offense versus the defense. It's not like the Vikings were missing a ton of guys, but
true.
But David Moore was an interesting revelation. Now he's out on he's in the COVID list now, so we may not see him against the Lions, which is a shame. But a guy who was added, you know, a practice squad guy, elevated, looks so the eye test tells you so confident catching kicks, which is so different than what they've had with Amari Rodgers. It's really, I mean, this might actually be a thing on a small sample. Is that possible?
Watching him was like, actually, I literally had a jaw dropping moment watching him return his first punt, just because
our bar is so low.
It is so low. It looks so natural. Like everybody else looks so clunky back there. Even Randall Cobb doesn't look quite right.
So I tweeted, take all my tweets about Tyler Irvin signing from a couple years ago and just put David Moore in there instead.
And somebody did it.
They said, the original tweet was 2019 Tyler Irvin is 2010 James Starks, my column.
But like
2021 David Moore is 2010 James Starks.
Assuming they don't do something stupid and like try to make Amari Rodgers happen because he'll be playing in this game. Like this fixes a big problem. You know, all of special teams is a disaster and their punt return is one of the bigger disasters. And he just looked so good. And the other thing about David Moore is he's a little bit of a straight line burner. So if MVS continues to struggle or has something wrong with him, it's also possible he can move outside and at least do the nine route role if they need that. He's not a shifty guy by any stretch, and he's not tall, but he can run fast in a straight line. So
it's worth noting he is a second gear guy.
You are right about that. He takes a while.
His 10-yard split is bad.
I don't know how you can be that fast in the 40 with that bad of a 10-yard split. It's kind of incredible.
Usain Bolt is a second gear guy. He is routinely in the back of the pack halfway through the race and is continuing to accelerate through the end of the sprint. I suspect that's David Moore's shtick.
Yeah.
He's not a sudden player.
He is not, but he catches
the ball. That explains why he's available kind of for free. And was a 7th-round draft pick, but still, like, it yet again, I mean, a tiniest sample, and no one is crowning him like the future of anything, but like that's just yet another example of a guy that this team has added that seems like an upgrade. You know, I'm so used to the Ted Thompson regime where upgrades you had to just like, you know, you might go weeks without seeing an actual upgrade addressed with somebody who's like ready to do the job now, and this Packers team seems to have fit. I mean, you know, we've been talking about Jerry Alexander, Za'Darius Smith, and David Bakhtiari all year long. I mean, at some point you just come to the realization they don't need them to win games. They should be nice, but like they don't truly need those guys because of the replacements have been so good.
So something I don't get about David Moore, at the beginning of the season, he was signed to Carolina and it was like 1 year, $4 million or something like that, with a guaranteed money/cap hit of $1.2 million. So the Panthers literally lit $1.2 million on fire instead of keep him on the roster? Like,
that's my reading of SpotTrack on that. Yeah, I mean, you save game checks, right?
But he's still guaranteed $1.2 million, and it's still that against the cap. Like, what the hell?
I don't know.
Is he that bad? Like, I didn't think so.
Clearly not. They're not the best franchise, you know? there.
Did you see that the Cardinals signed Rashad Breland to their practice squad?
Oh, God.
I did see that.
Little circle of life thing for the Rasul Douglas. Get a former Packer to fill that void.
According to Justice Mosqueda, Rashad Breland is the worst starting outside corner in the league.
He's toast. He had a really bad season. He was awful. He was on Minnesota earlier this season, and he's clearly cooked. So that is not going to – hopefully he doesn't have to play for the Cardinals. He's really bad.
Hopefully he does play for the Cardinals.
Against us, yes. That would be
I
nice.
Feel like that was a name that was bantied about as maybe the Packers would bring him back.
I liked Rashad Breland previously. He was good in his last stint with them. I'm sure I advocated for him coming back this year. But he is after seeing him play, he's cooked. He's got nothing left. So I'm glad we didn't. Good job scouting by the Packers. did you guys see, I don't know if this is good special teams or bad special teams, but did you see Mason Crosby slow play the kick when Bojo dropped the snap?
Yep.
Okay. Everybody should go watch it in slow motion. It is, I've never seen a kicker do it before. It's one of the most kicker savvy things I've ever seen. But just to explain, Corey Bojorquez dropped, I think it was the first field goal, dropped the snap on the first field goal, bobbled it, got it back up. Mason was coming like he does just with his, you know, normal kicking motion. And instead of coming full blast and missing the ball that wasn't there, he intentionally slowed down his leg and waited for it to get up there and then swung it through and drilled it. So,
but that's the other thing is his kick was like, it was like a sand trap shot. Like there was only follow through.
Only follow through. No wind up. So good job, Mason. Well done.
Thank goodness it was only a 32 yarder or whatever it was that made it possible. It's interesting because the field goal unit, which we talked about so much first half of the year, I think part of it was there were misses, but also like even the makes were some dramatic, like tucked inside the upright. We're not seeing that at all. Mason's drilling everything right now.
Yeah.
Either Steven Wirtle is good, or they got whatever was fixed. But field goals are no longer a concern for the Packers. A lot of aspects, special teams is the poster child. A lot of aspects that you kind of feel like they're quote unquote peaking at the right time.
Yeah,
I suppose.
The only snafu I can think of is Corey did honk a punt in this game. He did
tremendous.
Shanked one real bad. It was in an area where they maybe could have gone for it, but it was close. But that it happens once in a while. Hopefully, cold weather's not a problem for him, but worth keeping an eye on. But,
22 yard
punt.
It was so bad. There were a lot of COVID takes after that punt.
Gosh.
Who knows? You never know.
Everybody's
running around with it right now. It's entirely possible.
Yeah. It's not going to be a problem for them in a couple weeks, which is when it really matters, because they got about 3 weeks before their next meaningful football game. Everybody can rest up. Should we talk about the defense?
Yeah.
Sure. So Dalvin Cook was, I'm not going to say bad, just bottled.
He was bad.
Kenny Clark was getting double teamed and still making tackles at the line of scrimmage.
I think his best game of the year.
So I have a take about Kenny Clark.
Okay. Is it that he's
Kenny
awesome?
Kenny Clark in that game eulogized John Madden in the best way possible. Because one of John Madden's favorite Packers was Gilbert Brown, and Kenny was the guy that Madden thought Gilbert Brown was.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Because he can do lots of things, and Gilbert can only do one thing.
Gilbert could be big.
Anchor space.
John Madden had a line. It was either about Gilbert Brown or maybe like Charles Haley or somebody like that whose pants were falling down. And he once said, "Oh, you got a linemen. This usually doesn't happen to them because they got more holding their pants up." And I have no idea what he meant by that. I don't know what that means. I agree with him, but I don't know what it means.
It means butt. They have more butt.
Yeah, I wasn't sure of that in the beginning. I still like to leave it a little open-ended, but
so there's a my favorite Gilbert Brown related soundbite was Madden going, "There's Gilbert Brown at 3:30," and Pat goes, "I think you're being kind to him."
That's a great Pat Summerall quote. That's fantastic.
3:30, indeed. Anyway, Dalvin Cook was not all that effective as far as edge setting, because that's been a concern lately with Gary and Preston Smith switching spots. It seems like I know they broke a couple times, but it seemed like it was good again.
It was okay. It was I would say less of a concern in this game because even when they lost contain a couple times, but once they determined Mannion was as bad as they thought, safeties and corners were like right there to clean up messes. They were not like drifting back deep. So they got disguised a few times when they did lose it. But you're right. They clearly got yelled at, and they were not nearly as bad as they were last week. So that's good. Gary was especially improved, I think.
I feel like Devondre Campbell was cleaning up for everybody again, kind of back to his old self.
He looked good. I think he was hurting, and now he's not. He was just mauling people. Also, a quick shout-out to Kevin King for it's a good Kevin King. It's a good Kevin King, not a bad Kevin King, for tackling a guy short of the sticks. It took him.
Yeah, but he tried so hard.
It was like, but that's why I shout out. Like he put in so much effort, and you know he's not a good tackler. It was like a Tecmo Bowl tackle, where like the guys just grapple in place for 5 seconds while they wait for somebody else to come and determine who's going to win the grapple. That's exactly what it was. So, he made the tackle and he forced the turnover. So that's good. Yay, Kevin! Nice job.
Also, shout-outs to Kevin King for playing middle linebacker and lining up in the A-gap.
Also hilarious. And asking Devondre Campbell what he should do, which Devondre also told him.
Is this like the moment in Little Big League where they get excited about the aging player who hits a seeing eye single, and then they turn to each other like, why are we getting this excited about a seeing eye single? As sort of the indication that that they needed to move on from the player. Like, this is, oh, Kevin King, he tackled the guy shy of the sticks.
Yep. It is that.
Also, it was the most laborious tackle in the history of football.
Jaire Alexander back would still be pretty, pretty nice.
It would. It really would.
So in the rundown, you say the secondary wasn't really tested.
Yeah, which they weren't.
And then you mentioned the Garrett Bradbury reception.
Yes.
Which that was amazing.
Because it was like the biggest pass play of the game for the Vikings.
By 5 yards.
Yeah.
Nope. Second biggest, because that KJ Osborne catch at the very, very end. Absolute devastation that I felt, knowing that the Bradbury catch was now the second fiddle.
Yeah. Because everybody was looking to write that copy, myself included. And then they ruined it.
It's just terrible. It was an amazing catch by KJ Osborne. But you know what? I hate you, KJ Osborne. That was harsh. It was a cruel blow.
So something I do want to mention. Rasul Douglas openly admitted in an interview that he will try and jump certain plays and, quote, hope that Jesus is in the post. That exact thing happened in this game. And if it was against a better team, they would have gone after that much more.
Yeah. But on the other hand, he maybe jumped it much more, knowing that Sean Mannion was the one trying to take advantage of him not being in the deep slot.
Yeah, and also to be fair, Mannion almost missed Jefferson. Like, Jefferson had to make a leaping catch.
Every deep throw that Mannion made was awful. Like, he wasn't even close to connecting on most of those throws. He was missing guys by like 10 yards. He was a third round pick 5 years ago. Whoever scouted him is just awful, because you see these big doofy quarterbacks get drafted sometimes when they can like rocket the ball and you know look statuesque in the pocket and throw a nice tight spiral. Like, he looks like he's never played football before. He looks like he's uncoordinated. he doesn't look like an athlete. Like, his first throw was like this lollipop thing that like came out of his hand wrong. His stats weren't good. He wasn't picked by the analyst group of the Ram. I think he's a Ram before. Who decided he was a third round talent? He clearly is a terrible quarterback. Bad job, everybody who drafted Sean Mannion.
Also, I mean, he was drafted by the 2015 Rams.
Yeah.
Which was not a good team.
No, they weren't. But presumably more. I mean, he went in the third. Presumably they're not the only team that had a third round. Maybe they were, but well, whatever. He's awful. I don't know how you watch the guy play football for 5 minutes and decide that he's going to be something in the NFL.
But back to what you're saying, Matub, is you are, you know, implying a forecast here where Rasul Douglas trying to take one to the house could burn them in the playoffs.
Yes.
Like, a better quarterback could take advantage of that. I could see that happening.
Especially if they put a certain play on all year of like a dagger concept where they always threw the underneath, then that's something that Rasul's going to go after. And then you run a double off of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that. Hopefully, the hero becoming the villain.
Hopefully Rasul is aware of it, and you know, maybe he can make something out of the double move. You never know.
I think that's that catch is going to be the highlight of Garrett Bradbury's career.
It was
legitimately
good catch and run. Good, like that's some athleticism there.
I'm really bummed that my pun didn't take off as well as I thought it would.
It was genius. It was genius, Matub. Sometimes you amaze me. Sometimes I'm like, holy shit. He actually is smart.
Did I miss the pun? What was the pun?
He after Bradbury made the catch, Matub tweeted something wicked this way comes, a reference to the Ray Bradbury story.
Okay, that's great.
Which is, you know, next level stuff. Because when the Senators got the football, damn right, something wicked this way comes.
Yep. All right, I missed that, so apologies for that. That is just actually quite
outstanding
brilliant.
Work.
Yeah,
nice. Thank you. I do enjoy old school sci-fi, dystopian sci-fi. Big fan.
Yeah.
All right.
Really, also, Adrian Amos probably should have had like a forced fumble or forced interception on that hit. You know, 99% of the time, it's at least an incomplete pass. And, you know, just kind of a bummer from his perspective that he just laid wood on a guy with perfectly legal hits and caused Garrett Bradbury to have a 21-yard completion.
I mean, how often do you see someone do a perfect rugby form tackle, which causes the ball to fly 15 yards perfectly in the air?
Never happens. It's ridiculous.
Like, because he literally, it was a rugby form tackle. Like, he scooped the legs and picked him up. Like,
it was awesome.
That was gorgeous. Right. You want offense?
Offense was good.
Aaron Rodgers is going to win the MVP. Yeah. Well,
Is unless Hub ruins it.
and even without Hub Arkish opining very openly about how he's going to let his opinion of Aaron Rodgers as a person impact his MVP vote, which from my perspective, I know there's a lot of pushback. To each their own. It's why there's 50 of them. Everybody can do what they want. But it is worth wondering if others will follow suit, if there'll be a quiet, like, you know what? Rodgers has been kind of sucky as a man this year, so maybe we give the vote to somebody else. He just won it last year. Like, I could see that happening. I don't think there'll be enough people to do that because right now I just think Aaron Rodgers has put a huge amount of space between him and the rest of the field, but, you know, it's possible.
So my argument against that is there was a legitimate push for Adrian Peterson, comeback player of the year, after he was out for physically abusing his son.
Right. True.
Well, I think you also just look at how the fawning coverage of Ben Roethlisberger, who has some unanswered.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, there's a lot of that. do some tweet searching later on that.
I mean, that's
actually.
That's just ESPN. It's not necessarily 50 writers across the NFL who are all in lockstep on that. But, you know, I do think. I do think the default position for most writers is to simply go with the thing that they know the most about, and that is on-field success.
Yeah.
So I think ultimately they would rather weed out the political stuff themselves as well.
And, I've been as critical of Aaron as anybody, but, like, I would still vote for him for MVP in a second. There's no credible statistical case against Aaron at this point.
Right.
JR, do you want to hear a great Hub quote?
Tell me.
March 14th, 2019. Why can't fans separate actual analysis from fanboy talk? I like the Packers, and I hope they're back in the hunt this year. But haha, Clinton Dix is a more complete safety and better player than Adrian Amos.
I saw that you were digging through some receipts on Twitter, Matub. I saw that earlier today.
Yep.
It's not a pursuit to which I would personally go on a chaotic quest, but congratulations to finding that. That is quite the take. Congrats to Hub Arkish for leaving that up 2 years later. even 1 year later, when it was very clear that take was not going to stick.
Dude, there are responses from October like, you guys, you want to delete this?
You know what? He left it up. I have some measure of respect for that. That was a terrible, terrible call.
I truly think that stupid boomer left it up because he can't find the delete button.
The other thing is he got called on it. Like, the first person who called him on it was Zach Cruz, who is, you know, anything but a hack. And it asked him for examples of this and asked him to reconsider it. And I'm on this thread too, which is how I know this. And he still didn't, he didn't give any after that, which he should have.
Because Zach literally goes, dude, money talks. Adrian Amos signed for a lot more money and a lot longer contract.
Clearly the NFL disagrees with you on this. So, yeah.
That free agent class, Za'Darius Smith, Preston Smith, Billy Turner, Adrian Amos. Mm-hmm. I mean,
it's great. Well,
I had a year of donkey fans in person who would not leave me alone because, oh my God, you guys just paid that much for a backup guard. Who's laughing now, donkeys?
Well, it'd be nice if he was healthy. Yeah,
but, it would. But tremendous. Like, still, like, I didn't think Billy Turner was going to turn out to be nearly as good as he has been. That's just an outstanding job. That, I mean, who's the worst of that class now? Tough call.
I guess Preston, because Preston, you can say he objectively has one bad year of the three, but really good. I mean, Za'Darius would have to say the same thing because he hasn't played. So I don't know, man.
Tough call.
Just a class that Ted Thompson would have never brought us. You know, like that just isn't something he would have invested in. And Brian Gutekunst put his stamp on the franchise right there with the just what a time. All those guys are signed within what, 24 hours? Like that was
bam bam, you know, bam bam bam. Yep.
Right. Incredible. All right, back to the offense. Aaron Rodgers is a wizard. We've discussed.
Yes.
He's very good.
I don't.
PFF even loves him.
They do. The two throws to Devontae, like 30 yards downfield, where it's just like, oh, that was easy. They should just do that every play. Like,
also, it is worth noting. So something that Collinsworth always fawns over.
Late hands.
Is late hands.
Love, like, late hands.
JR, are you aware of this terminology?
I am not. Discuss.
So, when there is a deep pass to a wide receiver and the wide receiver is tracking the ball, the best thing that they can do is not try to catch the ball until the last moment.
Okay.
Because the DB, who is in man coverage and has his back to the quarterback, is trying to read the wide receiver's hands. So when wide receiver's hands go up, the DB will react and put his hands up.
Yep. Makes perfect sense.
Devontae does not try to catch a pass until it is literally at his shoulder pads.
It's insane.
and so there's no time for the DB to react.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it's impressive stuff. The back shoulder that was supposedly, I think, second play of the game on script. Not he was just going to throw it to Devontae no matter what. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's poetry, man. It was virtuoso.
Very famous Aaron Rodgers quote is, "If I can read your nameplate, I will throw at you."
Yep.
And both of those plays, you could easily.
Throws. Yeah.
Yep.
He's not going to win Offensive Player of the Year, Devontae Adams, if that is indeed an award that goes exclusively to non-quarterbacks. I think Jonathan Taylor or Cooper Kupp, it's going to be one of those two.
It'll be one of those two guys.
But, God, he should win Offensive Player of the Year. He's just so special.
So Kupp would probably get it because of volume. Jonathan Taylor would probably get it because Offensive Player of the Year usually goes to a running back.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little narrative there too with the Colts bouncing back from a 1-5 start or whatever it was. So
yeah,
kind of like that story.
From whence they came, they shall remain.
It's also just running back should get something. Mm-hmm. You know, we've taken so much from them; we should give something back.
Let's come up with the Paul Noonan Memorial Running Backs Matter Award.
So speaking of Paul Noonan's favorite running back, his boy AJ Dillon, now the second best receiving running back in the NFL, is that right?
That is correct, yes.
Incredible.
I thought he was second best in yards per target, period.
He is. No, just running back.
Just running backs, yeah. Okay.
There are wide receivers ahead of him. The only running back ahead of him is James Conner of the Arizona Cardinals. AJ Dillon, of course, the guy who, coming out of college, people gave scouting reports like he can't catch, he never caught in college, he probably has bad hands, things like that. Not true at all. And one of the questions I didn't get to ask him, by the way, was, would you have liked to be more involved in the passing game at Boston College? And do you think colleges do a disservice to college running backs by not throwing to them more? Because most college offenses don't involve the running back in the passing game. It just doesn't happen that much. And it didn't hurt. I mean, he's a second-round pick. He's doing fine. But I bet there are a lot of guys out there who don't get to show off their hands like they should and probably suffer quite a bit for it. So AJ is awesome in the passing game. Like, can't say enough about him. He has like a Robert Tonyan level of catch percentage this season, and he's replaced a lot of the production that they lost with Robert. That's kind of where it's gone, is to Dillon, not to other tight ends. So it's really cool to see.
And Aaron Jones looks great. John Runyon Jr., Yash Nyman, guys blocking great. Aaron Jones probably looked as healthy as he's been all season long. They were on the field at the same time for a few plays. I know we wrote about that at jsonline.com. That's an interesting new look.
Bow, bow, bow.
I don't know what that is.
Genuines. My pony.
Oh, it's the pony package. Okay.
I've been talking about Genuine all week long on Twitter because of pony references, and I can't believe I didn't get the bow, 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 but. I'm just a bachelor.
Matt, did you see my attempt to get AJ to call himself a fullback again?
Yes, I did.
I tried. He
it's so close.
I asked him who the best lead blocker on the team was. Just to try. Matt asked him if he enjoyed playing fullback or something like that, and he got offended at being called a fullback. So I tried.
Well, he took a 3rd-and-1 handoff.
That's
as the
right. He was fullback dive. So I tried. I'm trying to turn it into a thing where we always ask AJ Dillon about being a fullback. But he said that the best lead blocker on the team is actually Mercedes Lewis, which is almost certainly true. So yeah.
Mercedes so Lewis is the second best left tackle on the team.
Yeah.
But so fun aside, I almost lost my Twitter account because of the song Pony by Genuine.
Oh yeah.
I edited it into a video of David Bakhtiari pancaking and then sitting on TJ Watt.
Oh yeah. All right.
And that got DMCA'd and I lost my Twitter for 24 hours.
Fair enough.
Worth it. Worth it, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely worth it.
Interesting thing that people may not have noticed, that I know that people noticed that an umpire went out of the game early on with so they were down an official. It was like, I think the third game in the NFL slate in week 17 where an official was lost for some injury or illness or whatever, but they're down an official, which means there's really only one person looking at holding at any point during the rest of the game. And there were virtually no holding calls. There were very few flags in general. The Packers only got flagged once toward the very end of the game. And then there's like what, one accepted holding call or no?
There were no accepted holding calls. There was one that was declined on Garrett Bradbury actually, but that was it. And it was pretty clear early on that holding just wasn't going to be called very much. And I think certainly the Packers took advantage of that. The Vikings, I don't know if they did. It didn't show up if they did.
I'm pretty sure it was you who said, oh, there's an umpire down. Everyone should hold all the time.
It was.
You were two steps ahead. That's perfect. Yeah.
And you should. But the Packer running game was unbelievably good in this game. They actually out EPA'd Aaron. And, you know, Aaron had a good game. So that's no small feat. But Aaron Jones was ripping off like 20-yard carries seemingly every time he touched the ball. It was a great performance against a team that I think was probably geared up to stop the run, especially once the Packers got out to a multi-score lead. So, nice job by everybody adjusting to the circumstances and just pounding the rock.
So I had an interesting thought at the end of the game, watching Patrick Taylor run headfirst into 9-man boxes on halfback ISO.
And didn't get stuffed, no, I should point out. Got yards out of that.
But how brave of a human being do you have to be to trot out onto the field because you're the one they like the least and run headfirst into a wall of man that knows that you're coming?
Third string running backs just cannon fodder. And
like go out there and don't get hurt. But, yep. You know, if you do get hurt, we don't really care.
Like, he did okay, though.
He did. He looked good.
I kind of think we should get to questions soon, so I kind of want to rapid fire through Let's the rest of the offense. Alan Lazard, 6 catches on 7 or 6 of 7 contested catches, including the touchdown.
His previous to that, he had not caught a single contested catch in his previous 5 games, and now has caught quite a few. I think it's been a point of emphasis with him, and I think that's a good sign for the playoffs because Alan's a big guy, and building confidence that he can make those with Aaron actually gives him another legitimate option. He's been really good for the last few games.
MVS still struggling a little bit. Yeah.
Matub nodded. No idea what's wrong with him. Still shaking off injuries, whatever. But yeah, he's not looking so good, not looking fast. Even on his 9 routes, not getting separated.
I think this comes back to the going without practicing hard for an extended period of time, that there's a difference between being in shape and being in football shape.
Yep.
And we saw it took a week or two for Campbell to shake the rust off. And I believe MVS both dealing with post-COVID as well as a loss in the family, that he's allowed to have some time.
I think that's fine. Right. It's just something to keep an eye on. Hopefully he bounces back. But he was noticeably slower than usual, and that's not good.
Devontae is now second in DYAR to Cooper Kupp, which is good. And you noted that coming from the press conference after the game, sounds like he's an advocate of sticking the foot on the gas longer.
Heck yeah.
because they've let a couple, you know, leads dwindle. This is not one of those games where that happened. So it seemed like that sunk in pretty good.
Yeah. And watching this one live, I was like, why are they still passing in like the fourth quarter? And this is why. And that's good because if the Packers fall victim to anything, it is getting conservative too quickly and trying to rely on the running game. And
so it turns out, the system that puts you ahead by 20 is the one that you should continue to use the whole game.
It is, especially when you are as methodical about draining clock as they are anyway. Like, they always run the clock down to one, and, you know, Aaron's so good at completing passes, he's going to be extra good at it against a team that thinks they're going to run all the time. It makes a lot of sense. It was not necessary for this game, but I think it portends well for the playoffs and protecting leads in the playoffs.
And as far as last receiver, St. Brown, not Equanimeous, Amon-Ra St. Brown, is, I think, now the Lions' best player, the younger brother drafted this year. Lions have really famously nobody really talented on their roster. The Tim Boyle, Jordan Love show that everyone is hoping for, I think, will be the exciting plot line at this point.
Yeah.
But Amon-Ra St. Brown has turned into a nice player, and he's confident, too. He's got some swag.
Oh my God, dude. So the St. Brown family is the ball family of the NFL.
That they are.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They totally are.
Amon-Ra won't shut up about all the guys taken ahead of him. Like, he's doing like the Brady Six thing. Like these are all the quarterbacks taken before Tom Brady. Like, these are all the wide receivers taken before Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Maybe like, they should keep Amari Rodgers away to keep him safe. He's one of them, right?
Yeah, I think that's right.
I'm pretty sure he is.
And Amon-Ra St. Brown, like, after a kind of a slow start to the season, now his 82 catches leads the Lions on 109 targets.
That's and crazy. Really, oh, my God.
Really has turned into their number one receiver by a large margin.
Yeah, it's high.
His yards per reception are not that high, but that's because their offense is terrible, and he's catching passes from Jared Goff and Tim Boyle most of the time. And that's just not a recipe for, you know, catching the ball in stride, things like that. But he's had a really impressive season. If they get a better quarterback in Detroit, he will instantly be a fantasy superstar. So a guy to keep an eye on for the future and in this next game, because that's all they got.
Word coming out of Detroit is that they will not have a better quarterback
they
next
won't.
Year.
They absolutely won't. There's no way to get one next year. Maybe two years from now, though.
Tyler Huntley, somehow find a way to get his rights. Make it happen. Our guy needs to be free. Free Tyler Huntley.
Tyler Huntley, I think, might go to Washington.
I don't wish him on. The Lions, I think, are doing some good things, but I don't want to. Let's not do that.
Yeah.
Every place he could go sucks.
That's the problem. If a place needs a quarterback, it's because they're not a very good franchise.
I was trying to. I was looking up the last unanimous MVP because with the Habarkish thing, and like, people are going to be upset if Aaron Rodgers isn't unanimous, or some people are. And I was like, no. My point being that no one cares who is unanimous. Yeah. Lamar Jackson, Tyler Huntley's future backup. Lamar Jackson was unanimous just like 2 years ago.
Oh,
so
right.
Surprises me. I had no idea. Tom Brady in 2010 before that. It's not a thing that matters in the long term.
Nope, not at all. Nobody cares. Nobody remembers that.
Was Rodgers unanimous in 2011?
I don't believe he was. No. Nope.
Who got a vote over?
Let's see if I still have that tab open. I don't think I do.
What the hell?
Support for this podcast comes from Planned Parenthood. Your body is your own. That's why Planned Parenthood is committed to ensuring that everyone has the information and resources they need to make their own decisions about their bodies, including abortion care. Today, lawmakers who oppose abortion are challenging Planned Parenthood. Affordable, high-quality, basic health care for more than 2 million people is at stake. Planned Parenthood believes that health care is a basic human right. That's why they fight every day to push for common-sense policies that protect our right to control our own bodies. They also work tirelessly to oppose the onslaught of new policies aimed at interfering with personal decisions best left to patients and their doctors. They won't give up, and they won't back down. You can join Planned Parenthood in the fight to help make sure that the next generation can decide their own futures. The organization needs your support now more than ever. With supporters like you, they can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future to learn more and support their cause.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, I don't have it open, but we'll look it up. Somebody did.
Somebody will Google it while somebody else is vamping during the podcast, possibly while I'm answering my brother's Patreon question.
Let's get to it. Oh, I'm looking forward to it.
I'm not.
We've got a lot of questions. Patreon subscribers, of course, get question priority. And our number one patron, our number one fan is Danny, Danny J. Noonan, Danny Noonan, my neighbor, your brother. Paul, remember when you gave me your copy of Atlas Shrugged?
I do. Gotta,
I mean, we should give a little background here in case people don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah, so context, Aaron Rodgers was on the Manning cast this week. And it was mostly unobjectionable and non-controversial, except for a few moments. One of those being he pointed out that he has Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand on his bookshelf and didn't even say he read it or anything like that. Just pointed.
Oh, he actually openly said he didn't read
it. He said he didn't read it, right? Yeah. So
yeah.
I take every opportunity that I have just to make fun of Ayn Rand novels because they are trash. And so I made a Twitter joke that is escaping me at the moment. Actually, I made two of them. And
you said Aaron Rodgers is going to play for another 15 years because he's 19.
He's 19, which is yes. The joke, of course, being it, by the way, everybody knows somebody like this, even if they don't know it. But that you really only sort of understand take heart in Ayn Rand novels when you're 19 years old. You grow out of them eventually, for the most part, because they're trash. So I made that joke, and I don't know how it blew up. Actually, usually I catch the big person who retweets it, but I've been fending off and Ayn Rand people and Aaron Rodgers fans and anti-vaxxers and just generally speaking, people like that for the last 48 hours. This happened to me last week too, but that was my fault. This one I thought would go under the radar a little bit. It did not. Also a lot of likes. My ratio is good on those tweets, just for the record.
Great.
Here's the thing. I've read all of Ayn Rand's novels because I used to be much more libertarian than I am now. I am an old man now, and I used to be a douchebag college student myself. So, you know, sometimes you go through that kind of thing. But, you know, it serves me well in my old age because I read things skeptically. And even at the time, I read those skeptically and picked out a lot of crap in them, and so I can instantly recall anything about any Ayn Rand novel and push it back on people if they want to argue with me. And yes, so anyway, back in the day, I did in fact give Danny my copy of Atlas Shrugged, which I suspect he likes more than I do. So it found its home, and I'm glad it did. So yes, I remember it, and hope you're enjoying it, Danny. Yeah.
A couple things. Drew Brees got 2 votes in 2011 when Aaron Rodgers got the other 48. Second of
Backed
all,
it up too.
this is a question that's going to be a little embarrassing because it reveals that. Well, no, actually, it reveals that I never really was a college douchebag. I never read Atlas Shrugged. I don't quite know what the ethos is. The central ethos. Can you boil it down to like one or two things, or
yes.
Is it just too much?
No, it's not too much. In fact, it's very simple. It is the central ethos of Ayn Rand stuff and Atlas Shrugged is that society functions best and is morally correct when people act in their own self-interest, unimpeded by government or compassion or concern for other people. It looks down on any government restriction on commerce. It looks down on charity. It is very much a, if you give people charity, they will come to be reliant on it and not do hard work. That's sort of really it. So Ayn Rand novels are almost all dystopian in some way. Fountainhead's not. It's a different thing. But where the government has become overbearing. The whole plot of Atlas Shrugged is everybody who is a good, productive member of society goes on strike and stops being a good, productive member of society. So society crumbles. It's essentially, what if Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos went on strike? What would happen? And in that book, society completely falls apart. So... that's what you're looking at there.
I feel like Ayn Rand would be a big baseball fan. The mano y mano self-interest thing going on. That's good. That's good.
Pitcher wins, man. Pitcher wins.
All right. Mark Putscarby asks, out of the Rams.
I got to interrupt.
Tell me.
Paul, the first mid-size level Twitter account to retweet you was Kendall Brown.
I don't know who that
is. She's a 23,000 follower and 100% liberal following.
Huh. All right.
After that, a bunch of check marks.
I do think if I had a tweet that blew up and I didn't know why, I would come to Matub. I feel like he could suss that out very, very quickly.
Well, next time, remember, gentlemen, I am eternally online, engaged, and upset.
It's true. like all of Twitter. Could you look up why I posted that before, once the Cowboys lost, that that we should have a Jordan Love 6-touchdown game in Detroit, a nod, an homage to the Matt Flynn game in 2011. That went completely bonkers, 2,000 likes or whatever. You could maybe find that out. I didn't understand why that one got big either. So that gives you a little service project here while I'm reading these other questions. Mark Putscarby asks, out of the Rams, Bucks, Cowboys, and Cardinals, rank from most to least who you want to face in the playoffs. I'll go first.
All right.
I most would love to see the Rams because I'm pretty comfortable that this Packers team can beat them again, as they've done the last two times at Lambeau Field. I least want to see the Buccaneers because I think they're kind of the boogeyman. And then Cardinals second. So Rams, Cardinals, Cowboys, Buccaneers for me.
So I'll go... I think Cardinals at Lambeau is fine. Kyler's gotten worse as the season's gone on. They had the Cowboy win, which is good, but I think I'm okay with them in cold weather. I don't think they're going to do that much. They'll take close between them and the Rams. I agree with JR on the Rams. I'm comfortable with the Rams. Matthew Stafford is, you know, he turned back into the Detroit pumpkin that he is, and I'm fine facing him pretty much all the time. So I'll take those two at the top, and I think I slightly prefer playing the Bucks to the Cowboys at this point, boogeyman notwithstanding. Just without all their weapons, I feel like they're not going to win a shootout with the Packers. Without Chris Godwin and without Antonio Brown. And with Mike Evans, he looks okay. I think he played pretty well last game, but he does have a hamstring that can those pop up again sometimes. But and Leonard Fournette's out for them, too. It's just a tough road to hoe there. And, like, I don't ever want to pick Brady because it's stupid to do that, but the Cowboys are just much more of a complete team than the Bucks are. So I'll take the Cowboys as my sort of most feared. But I get anybody who wants to disagree because picking Tom Brady over anything else is stupid. So I get that.
Yeah, but Tom, do you have any preference?
Nope.
Nope. Bring them all on.
Bring them all on. Okay.
I have a feeling it's going to be.
I'm afraid of everyone.
I have a feeling you're going to see the Eagles or 49ers in the divisional round. I just have a feeling the Rams are going to be upset. Maybe even the Buccaneers because of what you just outlined. Yeah. Like some team is going to get to Lambeau that isn't a team that we're really talking about right now.
I'm still a little scared of the 49ers actually because Trey Lance I think is good. If they get out of their own way and just play him, I think they become much scarier. They're not going to win the Super Bowl with Garoppolo. I know they got there, but it's not going to happen. If Trey Lance is as good as he looked on Sunday, they are drastically improved from their normal state of being. So they should do that, and then they're scary.
In that case, you might want to cheer for the Rams on Sunday because they can keep the 49ers out of the playoffs entirely.
Yep.
If the Saints beat the Falcons, it's the Saints who get the 7, and the 49ers disappear. And the Saints could very well end up at Lambeau Field. So,
which is also scary in its own right based on how it
Taysom
went last
Hill.
Time.
Yeah, but this time it's Taysom Hill and not Jameis Winston, so that's a little different.
So, JR, I have some news.
You tell me.
There is no overt signal boost of your Jordan Love tweet.
Sometimes the contest is great, baby.
It is. This appears to be organic numbers.
Nice work. Yeah. Well done.
Feels good. Feels right. that's weird. Okay, Tim Braun asks, why is Leroy Butler not in the NFL Hall of Fame yet? And will he finally make it this year? I have written about this at jsonline.com. I tried to re-up it a little bit. Wrote about it in February. I do think this is his year. There is a... It's very difficult to explain why John Lynch got in over him because it pretty much, in my estimation, just boils down to John Lynch was a finalist sooner and had his case heard more times, 8 times, I think, before he got in. So I think it was more like everybody assigned John Lynch a place in line. But Leroy Butler on paper and in every way was the better safety.
Yeah.
And you could argue the same with Steve Atwater. So now there's two guys who are basically contemporaries of Butler's that are in. Everybody on the 1990s All-Decade team is in except Leroy Butler. I don't understand quite why he isn't in yet, other than the safety position is maybe one of the harder ones to sort of quantify, especially because Leroy was so good at everything. Like maybe people didn't understand how good he was at everything. But I do think there are just not that many guys sort of quote unquote ahead of him in line this year. There's two, I think, Richard Seymour and Tony Boselli, who have been longer finalists more times that will get in probably before him. But then it's, you know, then you got three more spots. And I don't think any of the newcomers, maybe DeMarcus Ware goes in, but like none of the newcomers are like, yes, that's a Hall of Famer.
Really? I think Andre Johnson is.
I mean, I think Andre Johnson will get in. I just don't think it's for sure this year and for sure ahead of Leroy Butler.
Yeah, I agree with that too.
So the big reason why you have the other two safeties in over Leroy Butler, one, John Lynch was a good GM for a while.
Stayed in the consciousness. Can't deny that's got to be part of it.
And Steve Atwater has been in every single big hit compilation since that asshole retired.
Well, that's what I'm for both of those guys. They're concussion machines. They showed up on a lot of highlight reels of big hits. And Leroy Butler, you know, a good tackler, but technician. Was not a concussor like the other two were.
No one cares about safety blitzing off the edge and getting a sack.
Right.
It always looks the same.
But like, you know, the all-decade team, which is also chosen at the time by like a committee of people affiliated with the Hall of Fame, the 1970s, 1980s, 1990s, all those guys are in.
Yep.
Except for Leroy Butler.
He's got to get in.
It's going to happen. Yeah. It's going to happen. And I 100% believe this is the year it does, because it gets harder next year. Joe Thomas shows up, a couple other guys mm-hmm. who are going to be get really strong consideration, if not definite consideration for those five spots. But it's going to happen this year. I just believe it. That's it. Yeah. No further thoughts.
Nope.
I shouldn't let my phone.
No further questions. Wait, Tim Braun has another question.
Who is John Galt?
Who is John Galt?
So for people who don't know, that is a reference to Atlas Shrugged, which I'm not going to explain because takes too long. I am going to mention, though, that of one of the jerks in my mentions this week kept ending his tweets with that, but spelling Galt wrong. And if you are going to reference that to make an Ayn Rand point, you should spell it right. Because, first of all, Ayn Rand would slap you for spelling it wrong because, you know, that's kind of the point. And it's like the only thing memorable about the whole stupid book is that. So don't do that. Get it right, people.
Also,
talk trash about it.
To be fair, that reference also happens in like the last part of the book. And most people don't make it that far.
No. That's like the first word of the book.
It's the opening line. Yeah, it's the opening line of the book. Explanation.
You don't learn.
But like you don't learn who John Galt
you
is.
Don't, you don't
like
near that's there. True. It's the last chapter. That's
also, I'm a big fan of some of the people in your mentions. There's one guy who was like, I bet this guy doesn't need to know who so-and-so and so-and-so are. And he spelled their names wrong. And I can't remember. It was characters from the book. He spelled them wrong too.
Yeah.
It just.
Good times.
John Galt,
literary giants in your mentions this week.
Spelled the traditional way, Gault, is the an entrepreneur and inventor who created the encased postage stamp in the 1860s.
Nice.
So that is who John Galt is.
Wow.
I prefer who is Willie Galt.
Screw that guy.
He sucks. What did he think about libertarianism? Flaily Joel Osment asks, did we learn anything about the run defense after the Minnesota game?
I think yes.
Kenny okay. Clark is the run defense.
He is the run. That's one, part one is Kenny Clark is the run defense. Part two is Devondre Campbell has got all his speed back and is patrolling the middle just fine. And I think part three is if there's not a threat of a pass, they can just shift personnel to take away running backs, which is useful too. Doesn't help when the other side's good at passing, and in the playoffs, that's usually the case. But you know, if they run into the Saints with Taysom, worth keeping in mind.
Sure. Second part of this question: do the Bucs purposefully drag their ankles on releasing Antonio Brown so other teams like the Cowboys can't pick him up for the playoffs? I don't know if it'd be that like calculated, but I could see them being like, you know what, screw you, Antonio Brown. We are not going to release you so that you can just find somewhere else.
My theory with Antonio Brown is that they are actually petitioning the league to have some kind of detriment clause allowing them to release him without a cap hit.
I think that's likely to be the case. And there's certainly, while they're fighting out, there's legal stuff they have to do before they cut Antonio Brown. They definitely don't want other people claiming him because, you know, Antonio Brown who wants revenge is no fun. He shouldn't be allowed to play. So there also might be disciplinary NFL action coming. You can't just leave a game halfway through. That's not allowed. They might be suspending him. That might get them some cap relief if that happens. There's a lot of reasons not to just cut him outright. And I don't think it's to protect them, but I'm sure they're not going to take any chances. I'm sure they'll hold on to him without paying him as long as they possibly can for that reason.
Brett Smith asks, have there been teams to improve and advance metrics in the postseason. I think this is a reference to how the Packers, and you wrote about this at Acme Packing Company, are 10th in DVOA. Typically, that's a bad omen for a playoff team. Or in other words, has a team been middle of the road in the regular season and then improved?
Yeah, the two Giants teams.
Yep.
That's exactly who I was going to ask about.
Well, except that they still weren't good, but even after winning the Super Bowl.
Right, they got lucky.
They were still outside the top 10 in DVOA, even the Super Bowl. But, On a basic level, the playoffs count in your DVOA. It's information they added in. So, yes, you can improve. It's just a matter of how much you can improve, which is, you know, not a ton over the course of 16, 17, 18 games. Worth noting, though, the Packers are up to 8th now in DVOA after the Minnesota win. And in weighted DVOA, which weights more current, more recent games more heavy, the Packers are up to 4th. So, Outsiders have seen the improvement there. And yeah, if they keep beating, well, the Lions game, I'm not sure how much it's going to move the needle. But if they keep beating the pants off of teams through the playoffs, they'll ascend to number one by the time they win the Super Bowl. So yeah, that will happen.
Jeremy Moen says, "Is anyone podcasting from their car?"
This is a reference. It's a reference to Zach Jacobson on Cheesehead TV with me, who did his segment from his car.
That's right. I saw that with the wheel in view. Very interesting. Yeah. I am podcasting from my bed. That's where I'm at right now, where it's warm because this house is cold.
I am podcasting from my bed in Kansahoma.
Yep.
Yeah.
Only I am in my dank basement.
Which, also, by the way, I should reiterate, when I am in Kansas, I am staying at the company house.
Yep.
This is not a hotel. I know that has been a question.
Jeremy Moen's actual question is, do you think that the team's slower pace is a product of the LaFleur Shanahan offensive system, or does it have more to do with how teams are defending the team? So across the league, we've seen an increase in cover two defense implemented by teams to reduce explosive plays. And I was wondering if that seems to have been a reason for the methodical pace and decreased explosive plays down the field.
Okay. Kind of two questions here. So first, they are slow by design. And it is the system more than anything else. The 49ers are also an extremely slow-paced team in terms of snapping the ball, as are the Ravens, who are not a Shanahan LaFleur system team, but sort of, I would say, adjacent in how they run things. The Packers are compounded by the fact that Aaron philosophically likes to take the clock down to make every adjustment he can and to see what the defense is going to do. So it's slow upon slow, and that's why they're the slowest. It does not have to do with how teams are defending the team. Like, they would do this, I think, regardless. Unless somebody's running like a super vanilla defense, then they might speed up a little bit. But as long as it's disguised in any way, it's not a product of anything other than that. In terms of explosive plays, I actually think the Packers had more explosive plays down the field lately. I believe over the last five games, Aaron's deep passing has snapped back to top five amongst all quarterbacks. I think he's completing 60% of his passes over 20 yards over the last five games. So you see him.
It's 59 and change. But yeah.
There you go. A lot of that is like those two Adams throws we talked about earlier in this game were deep throws. They have kind of a cut down / abandoned that just chuck it up to MVS play. Lazard is also, he's got a couple deep ones lately too. So I think they've actually done better explosive play wise lately than they did at the beginning of the season.
Also, so do you want to hear something fun I learned about this week?
Absolutely.
So, teams who run the play clock down, it's a very common tactic for them to break the huddle actually as late as possible. This allows them to read the defense, which is forced to hurry up and not disguise their coverage nearly as well.
Because they have to run to their spots because they don't have time to move. That makes a lot of sense.
Yep, and so it minimizes the amount of time that you spend at the line of scrimmage, so it minimizes the amount of time the defense has. So I would suspect with Rodgers reading the defense as much as he does, that's probably part of it.
I don't understand this toe thing. I mean, we were led to believe for a second there that it could potentially cost games for Aaron Rodgers, and we've seen him struggle with injuries. It's not like he's Superman, you know, with the calf stuff. Like, he's fought through it, and he's still been good. But he's been downright great with this toe injury. So, like,
well, JR, if you would have listened to the podcast last week.
I did listen to the podcast last week.
I said that the toe would be a non-factor because of the weather.
Yeah, I still think you're wrong about that. But
because of cortisone.
Because it'll be so cold he can't feel it, which is not how injuries work. when you're older, you'll understand. I think the thing about the toe is that your pinky toe doesn't matter. And there's only so bad your pinky toe can hurt. Like, you can just wrap that shit up.
Please make a parody Twitter account of Ben Baldwin called Pinky Toes Don't Matter.
Like, even if it's, like, broken, like, you could just tape it to the toe next to it and, you know, take painkillers and you'll be fine for 3 hours. It's not a big deal. Like, there's no amount that a pinky toe can be hurt that will stop you from playing 3 hours of football. It's just not a thing. It's fine. You don't
unless
need
it's,
it.
Unless it's gangrenous.
Well,
gross.
Fine.
I'm just saying. But that's...
Fine. If it's causing necrosis through your lower body, yes.
Thanks,
fine.
My 9-year-old son, for finding the one example that disproves.
Jesus, man.
I said cortisone, but you were talking about anesthetic, right? That instead of Toradol, they would use an anesthetic.
Yeah.
All right, we're on Twitter questions. Big Rig says, what is the funniest piece of media that AR-12 owns and unironically thinks is good?
I think we can answer this one because Danny asked.
It's the Chuck Norris bobblehead.
It's the Chuck Norris bobblehead. if you look at his bookshelf behind him, he has a bobblehead that you can't really see what it is. And Matt guessed correctly. It's Chuck Norris with two pistols in his hands, being all aggro. So he's got a Chuck Norris bobblehead with guns.
Oh, my gosh.
Yep.
And, you know, he absolutely unironically thinks that's awesome.
He definitely
There's
does.
No
well,
doubt.
Because Aaron Rodgers is the type of dude who, like, is stuck in a time capsule of internet culture. And that time capsule is about 2006.
Yeah.
And so he probably still unironically tells Chuck Norris jokes.
It's a Chuck Norris jokes thing. That's exactly what it is.
Oh, yeah. The disappointing thing here is, you know, we know this already, that he loves Dodgeball and quotes that movie ad nauseum.
Oh, yeah.
No doubt.
You're right.
And I also love that movie and quote it ad nauseum. And I am disappointed that Aaron Rodgers is probably still wielding that stuff unironically. But, you know, it's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him. Reading is Fundamental asks, what are you looking to see from Jordan Love this week that would be an encouraging sign for when he becomes the starter?
Man, we saw it against the Vikings.
Yeah, he played well in his small stint, threw the ball well. I just want to see him throwing, like, hard and on time and accurately. That's all. That's all I ask of any quarterback. So that's what I want to see.
Yeah, I would love to see him. I mean, I don't know what it means if he, like, really has a breakout game, if he really does duplicate. He'll never throw six touchdowns, but the Matt Flynn game from early 2012, late 2011. I don't know what it would necessarily if at this point it could inform anything that the Packers do going forward, because I got to think their course of action is kind of set in stone at this point. They know what they want to do, whether they want to fully commit to Jordan Love as the future or, you know, let's do everything we can to bring Aaron Rodgers back.
What if Love throws for six touchdowns and then the Packers trade him for a first and a fourth?
Yeah,
to the
sure.
Seahawks.
Great. Let's do
to the Seahawks.
Because they're going to need a quarterback. So, yeah, man. Let's let history repeat. It's a glorious thing. Did we talk about Matt Flynn's just tremendous tweet when somebody was like, remember when Seattle paid you all that money? And his response was, hell yeah, that was awesome. What a king. All right. This is from Ryan Ziegler. When Green Bay and Dallas face off at Lambeau, it's going to be McCarthy's bad clock management that sees Green Bay move on, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes,
it is. He can't help himself. He can't get out of his own way. I don't want that game to happen, but if it does, that's what will happen. Like, the Cowboys will play a pretty good game, and it'll get down to, like, a last possession situation, and they will screw up the clock management / game management, and the Packers will win it. So, yeah, that's what will happen.
I can't put my head in a space where Dallas with Mike McCarthy eliminates this Packers team from the postseason at Lambeau Field. It just, oh my gosh, it's just a conflagration of takes that I can't even do it.
That is a polluted mindset. It's like anything.
It's like anything. It's like,
I should stay positive whenever possible.
That's right.
Oh my, I'm a highly successful football coach.
Paul just deleted another who is John Galt question.
It was from Steve.
Who is John Galt? Steve Garshinsky wants to know, who is John Galt?
We already explained who John Galt is.
I'm guessing
is.
He's a long snapper because I've never heard of him. So
he's I don't know, John Gotti.
John Gotti's younger brother, John Galt. All right, Jonathan Deal asks, is resting your starters really the way to go when there's nothing to play for? Or are Packers fans just traumatized from over a decade ago? Also, which offensive lineman play was better, Bradbury or Dan Connolly? I mean, Bradbury caught a 21-yard pass. So in my
Dan
mind,
Dan Connolly returned to kick 70 yards.
I think it was Dan Connolly. I honestly do.
But Dan Connolly's play is, of course, better, but like it hurts. That one hurts. The Bradbury thing is just fun little, you know, little Americana. It's fine with me.
Without Dan Connolly, the Packers would have a victory over the Tom Brady Patriots with Matt Flynn as the quarterback.
Yep. By the way, going back to Steve's question really quickly, John Galt was a pitcher for the Tucson Old Pueblos in 1915. So there's your answer.
I had an Old Pueblos hat once. No, I didn't. Okay, so he's asking about resting the starters. That's the hot topic right now. You know, we've written about it at JS Online. There's just a lot of, you know, the players want to play a little bit. The 3 weeks off does seem like kind of a bad situation. But how much are they going to play? Like, what do you feel like? I think I could see it going half and half. I think it's probably just going to be like a quarter.
I think it'll be a quarter. Like, it'll be like the old school third preseason game. The starters will get like a quarter, a drive. If anything at all scary happens, that will end immediately. And then they're going to come out and that's it. And I don't think there's any good data on this at all in terms of whether it's smarter to play people or you get rusty or anything. Like, I literally don't think it exists.
I think the data exists to show that there's no correlation whatsoever.
There you go.
That's what you mean, I think.
That's what I mean. Like, it doesn't matter. And so all things being equal, you'd rather have time to get healthy and you still practice. Like, it's not like people are sitting around doing nothing. Like, we say that there's rust, and yes, game action matters, but these guys are still playing football even when they're not having games. So there shouldn't be that much rust, and it's better to make sure you have all of your important players for the playoffs versus, you know, having your best receiver blow out his knee like the Cowboys did, well, second best receiver, or having Antonio Brown lose his mind randomly during a game. Those things happen and they're bad and they ruin your season, so you don't want that above all else.
I have some bad news about the Tucson Old Pueblos.
What's that?
They are now known as the Tucson Toros.
Okay.
And they are ceased to exist in 2011. They were an independent affiliate.
Okay. Well,
RIP to the Old Pueblos.
They were AAA for 40 years.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. I want to say AAA Tucson, I want to say the Brewers might have had an affiliation there. Is that back when Travis Smith was the first pick of the Diamondbacks or Rays? I don't remember. But before they were full-fledged franchises, they got to draft a few guys. And Travis Smith didn't have a minor league home because they didn't have a full-fledged minor league affiliate tree set up yet. And so he played for the Brewers. And I think that might have been with the Toros. Now, I could be crossing up a whole bunch of stuff, but we'll have to look that up. Travis Smith was his name. Top pick for, I want to say the Diamondbacks, but I don't quite remember which team. Anyway, speaking of Antonio Brown, really disappointed. I was going to take my shirt off halfway through this podcast and forgot to do so. Opportunity. Scott Hettenbach asks, is there any parallel universe where it's defensible for LaFleur to play starters this weekend in Detroit? So
yes, they are going to force feed Devontae to get records.
Well, that's
I don't even know if that's that defensible. So, I mean, there is the way of thinking that you want to keep having guys get action to maintain momentum and not get rusty. But like I said, I don't think it's true. So, coaches know better than I do, though. That's the thing.
I've got an idea. The Packers only play the first quarter. So then that way, when they play in their next game, it's the second quarter and they won't suck at the beginning.
Hey, there's a good one. I love it.
Get it out of the way.
Get that shit out of your system. Well done. Well done. I think it comes down to, because there's no data to suggest that it's bad or good, it just comes down to like the mental state of your guys. Are they going to have a problem with not playing 3 weeks? Then let them play. If they're fine with it, then let them be fine with it and keep them healthy. Like, I don't know. It's a hard read because you don't often get into this situation where you have this much, you know, this much leeway. But I don't know. Discord questions. We go with Coffee Addict here. David Moore, legit punt kick returner at last? Question mark.
Yep.
This question doomed us to not get David Moore back.
It did, but still the answer is yes. So that's fine.
We could still see David Moore play. That's he has time.
Missing the Detroit game doesn't matter unless they do something stupid. That's all. So yes, he's legit. He's good. They should keep him.
Jerry Eldred asks, 2 weeks in a row with no embarrassing special teams blunders? Question mark.
True. Exclamation point.
It doesn't mean they're good now, but it does show that special teams doesn't always rear its head. Sometimes it just doesn't come up during a game. You can improve it like they have with David Moore. And, you know, sometimes Mason just makes the kick work. So those things all happen. And, you know, Bojo did honk that punt, and if it wasn't the Vikings, maybe that matters a lot more.
I'm sorry, did you just say honk?
Honk, yeah, he honked it.
It's a hell of a verb.
That's the noise that goes in my head when you miss a kick off the side of your foot. So,
on the rundown, that's the end of questions, by the way. On the rundown, you kind of already pre-wrote a description of this episode,
yes,
and I'm not sure we quite answered this part of it.
Oh, no.
The real cost of Kirk Cousins not playing.
Oh, yeah. We should talk about that.
It was 6 points.
That way I don't have to edit things. It's not 6 points, though. It's not 6 points. But
hilariously, Kirk Cousins being announced out only moved the line 6 points.
Yeah, but it costs a lot more than that because they were still alive for the playoffs if they win this game, and they had no chance without him, and so it costs like many, many millions of dollars to the Vikings franchise, potentially, to not have him get vaccinated and miss this game. You could say, like, oh, but they went to one with him, but they won last time with him, so it certainly was possible. And if you're the Vikings ownership, you should be really mad at this. Like, really, really, really mad. Like, he cost you real money by missing this game because he didn't want to get vaccinated. So, yeah.
Was it the Star Tribune that had a scathing editorial that was just in no uncertain terms? Yeah. They should drop him. He failed this organization. A lot of people to blame, but particularly Kirk Cousins, they should absolutely cut ties with him.
But here's the thing, man. If they cut him, it costs just as much.
It does. It's guaranteed. His money is guaranteed.
Yeah. I mean, they just backed the wrong horse.
Even if they post June 1 cut him, it's $45 million in dead money.
Unbelievable. That's unbelievable.
I mean, the Packers already won next year's NFC North.
So to next year's Kirk Cousins cap number is half of his entire contract's cap number.
Yeah, yeah. And guaranteed. He has so much leverage. Like, if he wants to push for an extension, they almost have to give it to him.
Yeah. All right, let me ask a question, because bigger picture is some rumbling rumination that Aaron Rodgers might actually be happy here. And, you know, Davante Adams is, I think, kind of saying it without saying it, or just saying it directly, that his future is he wants to go where Aaron Rodgers goes, or, you know, at the very least he will be here if Aaron Rodgers is here. And if not, then everything's on the table. As far as where this stands, do you buy into it at all that maybe we're getting to a point where, and I guess the bigger question I have for you is, what does that look like? Because financially that seems like such a difficult proposition. You know, we just talked about all the trouble that Minnesota would be in financially.
Yep.
What would it look like if the Packers keep Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams? Where do they have to suffer elsewhere?
So, a couple things. First of all, it's easier to trade Aaron next year because of what the restructure that happened, but it's not easy at all. I think it's Andrew Brandt who always says, Aaron has decided what he'll be paid, and the Packers get to decide where he will play, something like that. That hasn't changed at all. And I still don't buy that he wants to come back. I will never believe anything Aaron Rodgers tells me. And, you know, I want to see what he actually does. But
on that note,
yeah.
Have you noticed he's been doing the whole immunized versus vaccinated talk in his praise of the team? Aaron loves football. Aaron loves playing. Aaron thinks this year is special. He's happy going to work.
Yes.
He never says anything directly. I love playing in Green Bay. Like,
you're right about that. He is always, I don't think he thinks about it that much, but he is always very indirect with his words pretty much all the time.
Yes.
So they can keep both of them. They can put out void years forever. They can run extensions. It will screw their cap for many years to come. But honestly, it's probably worth it because you don't get Aaron Rodgers and your team every day. And it would take away a lot of their sort of middling depth that they have right now. So the team would be noticeably worse if they bring both of them back. They would lose a couple Smiths. Anybody who's like halfway decent on the team essentially would not be affordable anymore. So it would be a stars and scrubs team coming back for a second run, and it would hurt quite a bit, but they can do it. It's just it's a matter of making choices and deciding how many UDFAs and late round picks you can go with.
2018 all over again, baby. Let's go.
No MBS. No. I mean, that might not be the worst thing in the world anyway.
Well, but... sure. And even the Smiths. I mean, obviously Preston's having a great year, but I don't think anybody really imagines he'll be back next year.
Nobody thinks he's back.
Because they already signed Nick Perry once.
Right. And Za'Darius Smith is another one. I mean, obviously with the injury, but I don't know if he'd be back anyway.
No Russell Douglas. He's gone in this scenario.
Well, why is Razul more expensive? Because he's more
veteran.
He's
going to be a free agent, I believe.
Razul's
only through the end of the year.
Yeah.
Okay. So they would have to find another Razul Douglas on somebody else's practice squad. I mean, they'd have to be really creative. Find these free agents that are elite starters in the NFL.
And if NFC player of the months are just growing on trees.
Yeah, that's exactly right. All right. So I could see that being a challenge. But again, like... even if Aaron Rodgers leaves and Devontae leaves, we just mentioned how bad the North is next year. Like, it's kind of easy to win. So I feel like that's also part of the calculus for either way. Maybe they decide, you know what, let's do one more year because we got it. Or they're like, let's move on because we might win this division anyway. And then we can build for year 2, 3, 4 after that. I don't know.
I think that will probably enter into the calculation a little bit. Also, on the other hand, next year is not necessarily a good year to like tank. Not that you have Jordan Love, you want to see what you got there, but they almost won't be able to help winning like 6 games, no matter how bad they decide to be. So it is actually a pretty good year to go for it again, because you're going to be like assured a playoff. It's going to be one of those years where you can like probably lose Aaron half the season with a collarbone injury and still make the playoffs. And
shout out to Matt Flynn.
Yep. And again, you know, if you can do that, it's worth taking another shot. So. I don't know.
I'm still stuck on JR saying that's part of the calculus, which then immediately reminds me of the terrible MTV made for TV movie Together.
To Get Her. Yes. Really? JR, you don't know that.
JR, it's about a fictional boy band.
And it's our time, not Matt's. I'm surprised you've seen it.
Yeah, sorry. Atlas Shrugged and MTV's Together. Right. Just flew under my radar.
The big song of it is I know my calculus. I know you plus me equals us. So.
Yeah, that's the big song.
Matub, maybe you aren't smart. I don't know, Matub. I don't know where to go. I just never know where I fall with that guy.
Matt fell out of bed, so.
We have established that I have tapioca brain. Sometimes you hit something solid, and sometimes it's just mush.
All right.
All right, guys, we got it.
All right, before we go, JR, any plugs?
Oh, I did my usual, like, who are the likeliest foes in the divisional round now that we know that the Packers have that first round bye. MVP odds again. Aaron Rodgers is very good. For those who don't follow anything besides the Packers, Wisconsin Badgers alumnus TJ Watt is going to win Defensive Player of the Year.
Yep.
After a couple top two finishes the last 2 years. And he is actually on the cusp of the NFL single season sack record, which has stood since 2001. Now, there's the caveat. There's a 17th game this year, so there's one more chance. Also notable that TJ Watt has been hurt a couple games. He's only played in 14, so he'll have only 15
also,
next week against
the
Ravens.
Screw caveats on the sack record.
Right. I mean, Brett Favre is a caveat.
Brett Favre gave that sack up.
Right. So he's at 20 and a half right now, or 21 and a half right now. If he gets one sack next week, he'll have matched the new sack record. And more than that, he'll have it. So it's a pretty cool thing. It's got to go a little higher if you follow Football Reference. You know, the stats officially in the NFL rulebook only go back to 1982. Football Reference can go back much further than that. So there is somebody who's got one more sack, 23 sacks back in 1978. So that's still within reach, though, as well. So just a really cool thing. TJ Watt, I covered him in high school. I remember when he was a sophomore. I believe the first play I saw, he botched an onside kick. It wasn't the first play, but first game. And I was like, you know, this kid, he's tall. He's kind of built like young JJ, but I don't know, man. I mean, what do you know about a sophomore in high school? But definitely wasn't thinking that kid is going to be a future NFL Defensive Player of the Year and potential sack record holder. So I'll be following that, of course, and would love to see Jonathan Taylor win Offensive Player of the Year and have the Badgers sweep the two Player of the Year categories. I think that'd be really, really cool for a Badgers program that isn't thought of as like elite NFL machine necessarily. They've certainly had some good ones. So that's what I wrote about. I don't know if I have anything else cooking at the moment, but obviously we have tons of Packers coverage at jsonline.com. My time to shine, because there's a couple weeks going by here where there's not much. So that's where I come in to come up with some funny stuff.
By the way, that was Al Baker, who is the unofficial sack leader for single season with 23 for the Detroit Lions in his rookie season. So an impressive total that he never matched. Damn. Actually, he was dominant for three seasons and then kind of fell off a cliff. But
That's not a 16-game season, is it? 1978?
It is. Yes, it is.
It is. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Just barely. Okay. Matt, you got anything?
Today, John Meerdink of Active Packing Company and the Power Sweep put out a very nice thread about why you should start a podcast if you feel like it. And that caused me to unearth the single greatest piece of content I've ever created.
Oh yeah.
The time in 2010, I prank called an Apple store to complain about my iPad. Highly recommend it. It was created because I was on a podcast back then of just a bunch of idiots, and it allowed me to have the mic work to come in here and be competent.
All right. So it led to what we all enjoy today.
Yes.
Got it. You doing a Jerky Boys impression is why we have Porting Assault.
Yeah, well, I put on like this Minnesota accent and I called to complain about my iPad and iTunes. And
sounds extremely stupid.
Wow.
It was very stupid, but it is hilarious.
Okay. Well,
says the guy who created the bit.
Go check that out. As for me, at my Shepherd Express column, recapping the Vikings game and previewing what's going to be the Lions game up there now. I'll have something for APC later this week, stat-wise. I'll probably do something actually on playoff odds since their DVOA went up a lot. And that's good. And I was, of course, on Cheesehead TV's show.
Carry the G.
Thank you. Carry the G with AJ Dillon. You'll hear that in a minute as well, but go check that out. You can actually see what I look like if you want. If you don't catch Matt's screenshots of us and don't know, you can actually go do that. I don't recommend it, but you can if you want. Jared's like, no.
It's just offensive. It
is offensive. So that'll wrap it up for us. I'll have the mini pod later this week previewing the Lions, although I don't know what I'm going to tell you statistically about the damn Lions, but I'll come up with something. And I got myself some better technology over the holidays. And so soon we will be doing the APC Discord plays Tecmo Super Bowl. So that will be happening soon as well. Anyway, see you guys next week. Enjoy the game.
All this good stuff. Finally, we got Paul Noonan joining us. Paul from Acme Packing Company. Paul, what do you got for AJ, Paul?
Hey, AJ. And thanks again for taking the time out for this. Really do appreciate it. First thing, when I'm watching a game, I sort of take note of the normal Packer plays. And it seemed like in this last game that there were quite a few plays that we hadn't seen before, at least very much. A lot of those involved both you and Aaron Jones on the field at the same time. So first, do you like the plays where you're both out there together? And do you think that Matt opened up the playbook a little more for this game and that we might see a little bit more of that going forward, especially next week since everything's wrapped up?
Yeah, one thing I will say is we got a lot of tools, in the shed. We got a lot of stuff in there, and so it is fun when sometimes we break them out. But we do have to study them all, and so everybody else is like, "Oh, we've never seen that before." I'm like, "Whew, you guys have seen the other stuff we got." So it's great. I think Coach LaFleur and the coaching staff, Hackett, all those guys do a good job of pulling stuff out when we need it. But we got a lot. We got a lot of weapons. We got a lot of different looks we can pull out throughout this run. And it's always great to be out there with Jonesy. I always talk about it. My big brother, whatever, you see him in the background. But it's great to be out there at the same time because it does put defenses in a tough situation. I hate talking about myself, but talking about both of us together. You got two different styles of backs, but can both do both, but like both can run away from you, both can run over you. And you got one potentially going on the outside, one potentially going for a pass, one potentially blocking, one potentially running. And so it does definitely put the defense in a bind. And I do feel like we had some success with that when both of us were out there. And, it's also fun to do. Janet talked about backyard football.
Yeah.
That's what that felt like, kind of like when you're doing a pickup football back in elementary and you're at recess and you got the two best players. at your recess, and you're like, oh, both of you got to play running back, because back then everybody back. You're like, all right, go. So, you know, it was fun.
Yep. That makes a lot of sense. And kind of on the backyard football note, in the Packer offense, kind of anybody can end up in the backfield at any given time at either position. So out of anybody who plays, you know, in the running back spot, receiver, tight end, or you guys, who's the best lead blocker on the team?
Lead blocker.
Yep.
Ooh. Ah, I got to go Big Dog. I wanted to say Alan Lazard. I wanted to throw Josiah in there again. But you got to go Big Dog. I mean, this guy just moves people. I don't know, like, if it's always highlighted, because I never really watch the TV copies and stuff like that. But there's sometimes, like, he's just throwing around, like, all pro defenders, like DNs. And, like, these guys are, like, they'll be in, like, their fifth year. Like, they're studs. Don't get me wrong. Pro Bowl, whatever. What year is he in? 15, 16, whatever. And he's 15. Still ragged. He's ragged on them, throwing them out the club. And I'm like, man, you are a different breed. You are really different. And so it is cool to be on a team with somebody like that. I mean, just, I don't know how to describe it. It's just Big Dog. This is what he does. And so definitely, if there's anybody, if I'm getting a run play and it's fourth and one, and like, you need to get this, this is for the Super Bowl. This is for the Super Bowl. Who do you want in front of you? Big Dog. Absolutely.
All right. I love watching Mercedes Lewis just block, but also whenever he catches a ball, it seems like he's just angry at anybody who tries to tackle him. So I love watching that guy. All right. So on your second touchdown in this game, three Vikings had a pretty good shot at you. And it seemed like the cold might be starting to get to people a little bit at that point. And I wanted to know, like, can you start to tell when the cold is starting to sort of impact the other side, especially, but anybody? Like, do you start to lick your chops a little bit when, you know, they're down on the other side, they've been in 5-degree weather all game, and now they have to deal with you coming at them with a full head of steam?
Absolutely. Just kind of like how I mentioned earlier, it's all, I'm not going to be the type to say, you know, the cold's all a mindset. Like, no, it is cold. It's definitely cold. Everybody feels it cold. But, you know, the mindset part is, you know, how much you allow that cold to affect your game and affect your job. You're still cold. I still couldn't feel my finger, just like everybody up there in the stand. I still trying to get the heater when I was on the sideline. But, you know, and I do feel like I have an advantage just, you know, being from the East Coast and playing in cold environments before. So I am used to that. But, you know, if you can outlast that, and you do start to lean on people, that's when you get to just like old, like your idea of like old school, old fashioned football, just other teams just start to, you know, you start to see the business decisions in people's head.
Yep.
Not always like they're not going to tackle you. They'll still tackle you, but instead of going in, lowering their shoulders, more arm tackles, and they're trying to wrap your ankle so you can't move. And it's more of a push, full, like they're trying to push you with their hand rather than tackle you. And so, you know, you just keep leaning on them. It's 3 yards, it's 4 yards, it's 2 yards, it's 3 yards. And then eventually, shoot, I think the longest run I had yesterday was 9 yards. But, you know, it's just that kind of demoralizing thing. And like I said, I'm not a stat guy. I don't care if the longest run I have in my career is a 36-yarder against Chicago. You know, if we're still getting first down, then we're still winning. That it gets the job done. So, you know, it's great to see, that as an offense. And, you know, anytime you also have, as it also makes my job a lot easier when you got Devontae and, you know, all those guys in the receiver room and 12 back there who, you know, gets a nod as MVP for me, just doing this thing. So it's awesome.
Awesome. All right. So I'm a University of Wisconsin alum. A lot of my friends are as well. And just looking through some old tweets, I know you had an offer from Wisconsin, and I was wondering if you seriously considered going there or if it was just BC all the way.
No. I seriously considered Wisconsin. You know, I was so looking, going back to that, I had an initial top five, and I believe it was Notre Dame, Wisconsin, Michigan, Florida State, and Virginia. BC wasn't even my top five schools going into my junior year. And I went on visits to all of them besides Florida State, like unofficials. And I had I had a really bad visit to Wisconsin. And I always talk about
all right.
this. In my class, you know, at the time, the coaching staff said they're only going to take one running back, you know, and at the time, JT, Jonathan, Taylor was committed to Rutgers, and I was going to go, like, at the time, I was, like, their number one guy to pick, at least that's what the coaching staff was saying. And when I committed to Michigan, JT switched over to from Rutgers to Wisconsin. So my my father-in-law always gives me crap about it. He's like, you could have been the greatest running back in Wisconsin of all time. Like, da-da-da, you see those linemen, what they do. And trust me, when I was at beat, like, I was watching the highlights, and I'm watching the Wisconsin running linemen run 30 yards downfield pushing safeties. I'm like, nice. But no, in all seriousness, no, I did commit to Michigan first, and then I decommitted and went to BC. I just want to be close to home. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on in my hometown when I committed, and I wanted to show people that, you know, you can get your dreams accomplished from, you know, wherever you're at. And it was close enough that people could come up, drive 2 hours to come see me, and, you know, look at us now. We're here on Cheesehead TV, so I made
it. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
I made it.
You're living that Wisconsin life. Not only did Paul find that tweet, I love that. That is old school, that tweet of you getting the offer from Wisconsin. But he also found your updated profile for Tecmo Super Bowl. Are you kidding me with this? Paul, what the hell is this? I know Tecmo Super Bowl. So, I used to play it when I was a much younger man. But what is going on with AJ Dillon and Tecmo Super Bowl?
So long before Madden ever existed, Tecmo Super Bowl was the most popular football video game to exist. And there is a dedicated group of homebrewers who updates it every year. And you can get it for free on a computer. I always buy the actual thing. This is the latest one. So if you've never seen yourself rendered in 8-bit football, that's what they popped up on the screen.
Hey,
there
I
before.
Love it. I need it now.
And they do a good job. I think your picture is not quite what I had envisioned it looking like, but
there it is.
But you know, it's made by
that's
a bunch of
awesome.
devoted guys who do it for every single player in the NFL. So we'll cut them a little slack.
Hey, no, I love it. That's awesome. I mean, hopefully my stats are better than they are in Madden. Madden, I think I'm still 78.
Yeah, they're still a little low in Tecmo just because they make it before the season. I'm sure next year they'll like double.
Madden,
you up.
Madden, I'm a 78. And my Oof. Catching is a 64.
Oh well, that's just rude.
They must have talked to PFF before.
That's preposterous, AJ.
Preposterous. It must have talked to
haters.
Yep.
Exactly. Well, you know, we have a campaign ready to roll out this offseason to make sure that never happens again, and that travesty is completely.
The only campaign I got rolling out this offseason is my mayoral campaign. You'll see me in Short County.
Naturally.
Going town to town.
Dressing the flesh.
I do
kissing babies.
Yep. I do stats for this I do stats for our site, and as of now you're second in yards per target among running backs. So it PFF
Boom.
Could not have been more wrong.
Boom.
Use my hands to use my heart. Even if I died alone. Even if I died alone.
Support for this podcast comes from Planned Parenthood. It's hard to imagine a world where we leave future generations with fewer rights and freedoms. Since the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills aimed at blocking people from getting the essential sexual and reproductive care they need, including abortion. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves access to care. And with supporters like you, they can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future to learn more and support their cause.